Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Are you all stressed out? Stress is common these days. A 2010 study by the American Psychological Association found the majority of Americans are living with moderate or even high levels of stress, and we don't know what to do about it. Technology is blamed for some of the stress in our lives. Can technology also help us reduce the stress in our lives? That's the question today. Some gadgets and apps are being used to reduce stress and better manage our time, which is maybe another source of stress in our lives. Joining us now to talk about all of that is our regular digital media consultants, Deborah Jasper and Betsy Hubbard, co-founders of Mindset Digital. Welcome back, Deborah.
Hey, thanks, Ann. Great to be here.
And Betsy as well.
Good to see you again.
For our listeners, have you downloaded one of those apps to reduce stress or organize your time? Can you give us a call and tell us how it worked? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. And you can tweet at Ann Fisher, WOSU, #, All Sides. So, apps to help organize your life / be more productive. That's different than relaxation. What's the difference?
Well, these apps are designed to, you know, help you to give you notice, for example, when you're going to be taking a phone call or to remind you to pick up the milk. In fact, there's an app called Remember the Milk, which I was playing around with this morning, which is designed to help you organize your to-do list. You can organize it by your, you know, what you need to do personally, what you need to do at work. You can send other people to-dos if they are engaged in this app with you. So it's just designed to help you organize what you've got going on. And even Siri, which is not an app, obviously, but on, if you have the new iPhone, you can say, Tom is calling me today at 4 o'clock. Can you remind me? Or Sarah's, you know, I'm meeting with Sarah at 11. Please remind me at 10:30. And actually, I need that because I never remember when I'm supposed to be on a conference call or when someone's supposed to call me.
Because it's great to keep, you know, have your handheld calendar and be pumping everything into it. But if you're not, it's not like the calendar on the kitchen refrigerator where it's sitting there staring in the face every morning.
Yeah.
And in fact, Siri is helpful along those lines.
Right.
What I wanted to say is, hey, bonehead, get up and go do this. But she won't. She's too nice.
Maybe they can come out with a different version, sort of the drill sergeant version.
We need, Remember the Milk. We need drill sergeant. A drill sergeant app would be very popular.
Lazy.
And if you invent it out there, give us credit.
Yeah. So there's that organizational thing, Evernote.
Yeah, so that's Evernote's a really nice system designed to help you just keep track of everything. You know, sometimes they use their tagline of remember everything. Because what's happening now is we have a lot of information coming to us in different sources, and it's just like little scraps. And who has time to kind of file those scraps away? Evernote makes that easy to do. So you sign up for an account. It's free initially. You can choose to upgrade to a premium account, which means it will be ad-free. But what it allows you to do is, say you're browsing the web and you see a great web page and you think, oh, that's really useful. I want to save that. So you can save it in Evernote and it'll save a copy of that web page with all those links there. And then you can label it and tag it and kind of file it away, but without ever printing anything out. But then you are at an event and you take a picture. Well, you can file that into Evernote. Or you can capture an audio clip or file that into Evernote. And so now all these little scraps of information that you have are being organized in one place. Part of the power of it is that it is cloud-based. And so what that means is I can log on to my laptop and get that information. I can get it from my phone. I can go to a tablet. I can be at the public library and log on to their computer. And all of this information is now accessible in all those ways.
So, yes. I mean, but in sort of real life, so Betsy was saying, we were talking about this earlier. So, Ann, you have a great recipe. And you're saying, oh, all you do is add some cheese and throw in some sausage and whatever. And I can just record
that. You're
not
much of a cook. Go on.
Yeah, I'm not either. That's why I'm having trouble making up a recipe. But I can record that and then file that away. So if I'm at a party and I say, I love this taco dip, you can just, you know, I could say, here, just tell me how to make it. So that kind of thing.
You can capture it and file it all the way.
And then you can actually record from
Yeah, you record it. Mm-hmm. You record it on your phone, and then you just file it away with the rest of your notes. And so one of the nice features of this, too, is if you take a picture of something. So say, you know, it's my son's basketball schedule. They just posted it on the wall. But how useful is it to me on the wall? Because I can't I mean, I'm not going to write it all down. I don't have time. I can snap a picture of that, and I file it away in Evernote. And now Evernote can search the text that's in that picture. So if I need to find when the Cavaliers play, all I have to do is type in Cavaliers, and it'll bring up the schedule for me. So now it not only saves it, but it makes it searchable, so I can keep track of all this information I'm collecting.
So we were saying if you have a business card, you can just take a picture of it, and then that business card becomes searchable. Because whoever types in the names on all those business cards that you get, no one ever does, and then they're in a pile. I don't know. Mine's in a stack, rubber banded, you know, for later use, and I never look at them again. So it's that sort of thing. Although, I just want to say, it takes time to use these, and we're all short on time. That's why we want
these. I'm getting
these.
All stressed out.
I mean, that is sort of the challenge. Yeah. Even I went to Remember the Milk this morning, and I was trying to figure it out. And I'm thinking, okay, this is going to take 15 minutes for me to make sense of this. And who has 15 minutes? So that is one of the challenges.
There's a learning curve.
There's a learning curve. You just
got to stick to it.
Right. But as you learn one of them, the others become more intuitive and get easier.
What is it? Is it called Cozy?
Yeah, Cozy.
It's an online calendar for a family.
Yeah, so this is taking the same some of the same functions that are in these other systems, but putting it together for family life. So now you can coordinate all your family schedules. You can decide who's, you know, driving the carpool and who's picking up, and an easy to see interface. You can assign tasks. You can text your child every day that they need to remember to walk the dog after school, and you can automate that. You can also do grocery lists. And again, the nice power of that is you can sit down and do that on your computer, but next time you're in the grocery store, you pull it up on your phone and there it is. Or your husband logs in and pulls up the same list. So this information now can be shared among family members. And they're also saying that you can create a family journal here too. So you can capture the memories. So say you're at the hockey game and you take a picture, you can file it away on that day. And so you're kind of keeping a digital scrapbook of what your family is doing as well. So lots of different functionality built into something designed just for families.
Just one question. Will it convince my husband to go to the grocery store?
And will it convince my son to walk the dog?
Okay, there's probably another app for that. I think that's the drill sergeant one.
If you can get my husband to go to the grocery store, I will download that app. Sorry, honey. I know. You do go.
apps to keep you offline.
Right. What? Okay. So maybe the problem is maybe you're stressed out because, you know, you're spending too much time surfing the web and you're distracted by Facebook and Twitter. You can download apps, and actually most of these you have to pay for, that will keep you off those sites.
This cracks me up.
So there's something called Freedom, for example, and you can pay $10 to download something on your computer which will lock you out of social media sites. So you can say, for the next hour, I really have to focus. Don't let me check Facebook, and it will prevent you from getting online.
You can also just do this little thing where you walk over to the wall and pull the plug.
But you can always put the plug back in.
But you can put it back in. I do think this speaks to the sort of addiction nature of some social media sites. And, you know, people just have a hard time not checking Facebook or not tweeting.
Well, it's acknowledging that it's part of the problem.
Yeah, yes. It really is acknowledging that this is a problem. If you tweet all day but you really have to get that report done, maybe this is the way that you do it. You just force yourself to get off Twitter.
And related to that, rescue time.
Yeah, so rescue time is a much more complex system that doesn't just block the internet. It can do that for you too, but it will track how much time you're spending where and at what time of day. So you can review your day and see exactly when you're going. And it's not just social media, it's any kind of site. So you can see how much of your day you're spending on news sites and how much you're spending on email and how much you're spending just surfing the web. And it compiles all of that over time. You can also enter time in, so you can use it as a time tracking system and saying, well, I spent, you know, 30% of my day today on the phone, and I spent 20% in meetings, and so you can just start to account for how you're using your time, and then the idea is make better choices about how to be more efficient and effective.
Do you think you really want to know?
Well, it's kind of like keeping a diary when you're trying to quit smoking, you know, that first week, like with Smoke Stoppers, they always want you to track, and with eating, dieting, that kind of thing, first they want you to just keep track of what you are
eating. Just document. How are you using your time?
Knowledge is power. So now that, then you get all stressed out.
I was going to say, if all of this is stressing you out, you can do meditation apps that will help you sleep and will help you sort of get into a less stressful state of mind. So,
how popular are these? Mindfulness meditation. It costs $1.99.
Yeah.
Well,
there's a lot of apps out there. I mean, there's, you know, this is a big section of, and both on iPhones and Androids, there's a lot of apps designed to kind of bring meditation and relaxation techniques into your life, which I think speaks to what you started with, is Americans are feeling a lot of stress.
Although we do laugh because some of them say, so before you start this, you know, make sure that you have everything done that you need to do for the day. Well, if I had everything done I need to do for the day, I probably could go to
That's
sleep.
That's the problem.
That would be the problem. So in some sense, you say, all right. But on the other hand, sometimes it's really nice to just sort of relax, to turn it all off, maybe to have someone sort of talk you through some relaxation techniques. I've done that, and that can be really helpful. And this will do that for you. So in the end of the day, you know, you have this nice soothing voice come on and just help you relax right before you go to sleep.
Yeah.
And they do say one key way to relax at the end of the day is to turn off your computer a couple hours before you're trying to go to bed, because that screen, you know, when I work late on a computer at night and I do turn it off, I'm just wide awake. So a lot of times we do need help sort of winding down and letting all of this go, because it can be overwhelming.
Yeah, I usually, if I'm going to be reading at night, which I often do before I go to bed, I do the Kindle first, and then I wrap it up with a book. Because I'm always reading three or four at a time anyway,
right.
So
yeah.
Why not?
Back away from the screens.
Back away from the Kindle.
Yeah.
So
strategy.
What about count sheep?
Yeah.
What, I mean, seriously?
Okay. That's just, we added that in for fun, because there are no fewer than 7 different iPhone apps that I counted that allow you to just literally count sheep. And some of them you have to pay for, but it really is just a single sheep jumping over a fence one at a time that you can count. So
this is an app for people who don't have a great imagination.
Right.
If you're not, you know, if you're a literal person, although Betsy and I were laughing because Betsy's very visual and I'm really text oriented. So I want my to-do list to be very text-oriented, you know, and Betsy was really excited about Evernote because you can take pictures of things. And
that can just jog your memory alone.
Right,
yeah,
absolutely.
You know, but that's not how I sort of think. I was a journalist for 20 years. I think in text. But the great thing about this is you can choose the app that makes most sense for you. Are you more text-oriented? Do you really want that written-out to-do list? Could you have a visual to-do list? I mean, that's kind of fascinating. It's just an interesting idea.
There's another company, Mozaic. It's going to launch 4 apps designed to help people stop negative thoughts and engage in deep breathing and all that kind of stuff. I mean, these things are serious.
They're
serious.
This can change our health. I mean, you know, really, people. It's like last week when we were talking about all those apps that help you walk more and help you exercise more. I mean, we all need a little help, and we have all love coaching. You know, coaching works. So this is a way of sort of getting a coach to your phone and helping you think about getting coached and relaxing, getting coached and getting organized. It's just like having your own personal coach help you do a lot of different kinds of things.
Some of the established systems for organization, like Franklin Covey, they've put out their own apps too.
Sure, yeah. And the Getting Things Done system has sort of parallel apps that help you do it. So it's applying these same principles. I mean, it's taking just in many of them, taking the idea of a to-do list, which is probably dates back to the beginning of human history, and just updating it using new tools.
I got a tweet from you yesterday from Dragon Dictation. How did that
work? Oh, yeah, Dragon Dictation, using your voice to record notes.
So for those of us, especially who may type very slowly on a phone, I'm not very good with my thumbs, you know, Dragon Dictation is an app you can download that you can just talk into it.
And it's free.
And it's free. And it will transfer, you know, your speaking into text, and then you can email it, or you can update it to Facebook, or you can tweet it to somebody.
And Siri can do that, too.
Mm-hmm. Right. Here's so this is for those of us who don't have Siri. There's an app for that.
But the funny thing is, I'm from Southern Kentucky, and Siri, and I have that accent. Every now and then, you'll hear my accent come out. And whenever I say call Jim, because my husband's name is Jim, you know, Siri thinks I'm saying something besides J-I-M. So you can tell when you have an accent, sometimes some of these systems have a hard time understanding.
Right. It takes a while to get to know Siri, I found. And I have to keep my kid off the phone so that she gets to know my voice and not his. But other than that, you know, we're working on it, aren't we, Siri? I want to thank my guest, Deborah Jasper, social media consultant and co-founder of Mindset Digital. Deborah, as always, thanks for joining
us. Thanks, Ann.
And her partner in...
Don't say crime.
Okay. Betsy Hubbard, social media consultant and co-founder of Mindset Digital. Betsy, glad to have you again.
Always good to be here.
Coming up, we're going to get the latest on that huge electronics show in Las Vegas. It's over with now. We'll get the, what is it? Not the obituary. There's another word for it. We'll figure that out in the meantime. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. And you can help shorten the 89.7 NPR News winter membership drive. For every 100 sustaining members we receive, we will eliminate one day from our drive. As a sustaining member, your membership never expires, and your member card renews annually. But right now, you can help take one day off of our upcoming drive. And the drive begins soon, so visit WOSU.org and make your sustaining gift. And thanks for your support.
Support for 89.7 comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
51 degrees with some rain in downtown Columbus. Occasional showers today, a high of 56. A chance of rain for tonight, mixing with a little snow as it gets colder, a low of 22 degrees. Scattered flurries for Wednesday and some sunshine, a high of 31. All Sides continues on 89.7.
The International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas came to a close on Friday, setting records as the largest in the event's 44-year history, featuring 31 exhibitors and attendance of 153,000. Today on All Sides, we're going to continue our conversation about the show and the companies there that showed off their latest tech products and innovations for the coming year and beyond. Joining us now is Steve Fox. Steve is editorial director of PC World in San Francisco, where he oversees editorial content and strategy for PCWorld.com and PC World Magazine. Welcome back, Steve.
Thanks. It's great to be back, and it's especially great to be away from Las Vegas after 4 days of just nonstop wandering about, ripping through shoe leather and the rest.
Well, unlike the ad, what happens in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas, I want you to tell us what happened right now. We talked to you last week because you were just leaving for the ICES. You have told us that some of the biggest news from the show floor was the future of HDTV.
Right, and you know, in retrospect, having now seen hundreds and hundreds of TVs and the rest, it seems, at CES, as I look back through the rearview mirror, I think TVs were the story this year at CES, which, you know, is actually a little surprising. You know, last year we talked a lot about TVs, and it was about 3D TV. That kind of went clunk. They still have 3D TVs, but consumers were not all that excited about them. This year, it's really about, let's call them smart TVs. Everyone has some version of a smart TV. And as I was trying to come up with the various categories of what we saw there, there were talking TVs. There were, of course, huge TVs, 80-inch, 84-inch TVs. There was Google TV, and Google TV is a software platform will appear on TVs that allow you to do all kinds of interesting things. There were amazing screens built around this OLED technology. There were wireless TVs, things you can truck around elsewhere, even to the point of without plugging them into the wall. And then there's this new super high-resolution TVs. That's a lot of different kinds of TVs to be introduced at one show. And I can tell you that for the showgoers, they were gathered around these screens. In fact, one of our biggest complaints was a lot of companies put some of their most wonderful, best-looking products in somewhat crowded areas, and it just meant total logjam, which meant that a lot of us were stuck wading through crowds in order to look at a TV.
Which is, like, not your idea of a good time. So tell us about Google TV. There's the Marvel's Qdio?
Right. So, Google TV, it's basically a software platform, right? And so it is built into various TV sets. So Vizio is a big maker of TVs. They've announced a partnership with Google TV. They're using Google TV 2.0. There are actually a number of other partners for Google TV, Samsung, LG. And so what you're going to see is you'll have Google TV on these sets. It's going to allow like a live TV integration. It'll have apps. It'll give you on-demand TV. You can get whole seasons. It has a very robust search for movies. As you would imagine, given who it is, there's some really neat YouTube integration. It's a way of making the computer, or rather the TV, a little more computer-like, except, you know, with all the ease of use that Google is known for and that works for. And I think we'll see a lot of this happen within TVs. Certainly, you know, based upon what we saw at the show, a lot of people are jumping into bed with Google.
So with this Google software, can you just Google stuff on your television?
Sure. Some of it feels very much like just using Google, but a lot of it is, it's clearly designed for a TV interface, and that's one of the things that they've done well. I mean, they didn't build it on their own. It was developed with, you know, I think Intel and Sony were involved and some other folks. And so it's an Android operating system. Android is, of course, the operating system that Google has on phones and tablets and various other things. That's an open source operating system, and uses the Chrome browser, which is kind of a Linux-based browser. So you get some sort of real interactivity as you look at this, and I think that's exciting. You know, I can't guarantee that these work. Other systems have come along and, you know, tried to make TVs smarter. This seems to be the most promising one we've seen so far.
To our listeners out there, do you have any questions about all the new TVs coming out? Our guest, Steve Fox, editorial director of PC World, he was there last week at the International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. We're talking about televisions today. So give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Question about those 3D televisions? Give us a call. You can also email us, and you can go on to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page if you'd like.
Now, I'd love to mention one TV we saw that just kind of knocked us out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's I'll give you the bad news first. It's not a TV you can buy, or at least not yet. It was a prototype. It's from Sony. It's a 55-inch, what's called Crystal LED HD TV. The picture is unlike anything I've ever seen. It uses a different style. Instead of this sort of the LED backlighting, it uses these tiny LED lights. It was absolutely one of our favorites there. These small white LEDs, typically you have white LEDs behind color filters. That's the way the TV works.
Mm-hmm.
This one, they have a separate red, green, and blue LED for every pixel on the screen. So just imagine the kind of clarity and definition you can get. It was remarkable. It looked live. So, of course, you know, the first question we asked was, when does this come out? And they said, well, can't really say on that one. It's a prototype. I think we will start seeing more things like this, these separate crystal LED HD TVs. My guess is this could well be the big news of next year, but in the meantime, it's certainly knocked us out.
To what extent does the price point affect their decisions to put things out and the market? Because they can make it now.
Oh, yeah, but actually, no one wants to put out something that no one will buy. In general, on TVs and in most technologies, but you see it especially in display technologies like TV, you know, for large screens, it initially costs a lot to make a large screen TV. As volume increases, factories get to crank out more of these. They get to see, some sort of reduction because of scale. That's when these things appear. Invariably, the first very large TVs are going to be way too expensive, and therefore the early adopters maybe it's the people at Vegas who've actually won something and just need to plunk some money down. Not that I saw all that many of those people last week. But, you know, for mass production, it needs to actually be at least in the range of some sort of affordability. I mean, you know, you're talking 84-inch TVs. These things can be crazily expensive.
There's some pretty amazing clarity on televisions now as it is on pretty big screens. So to what extent does that kind of – does clarity alone drive a purchase?
Well, to be honest, for a lot of people – and I suspect for many people, once you get to a certain point, you don't – it's not going to look any better. Like for me, I love music, but once I get to a certain point – it sounds good enough to me, and real audiophiles will say, oh, but listen to this. You know, it's sampled at this rate. It sounds much better. And I kind of nod my head, and what I'm thinking to myself is, yeah, I'm sure that's really good, and maybe if my ears were better, I could tell. On TVs, and we do a lot of testing of TVs, and we're looking for artifacts and strange little motions. And as I go into the lab downstairs where we do all this testing, my TV experts are always showing me little things. And when I look very closely, I can say, oh, yeah, I can see that little movement. Those bricks seem to be vibrating a little. But I have to admit that in general, when I sit down and watch a movie, I don't notice that. I may be like a lot of people, but I think when you're talking about super high resolution, and that was one of the other themes of this show, this new so-called 4K and more high resolution, you do notice a difference, the skin tones, everything else. Things just look more real. In some ways, it's subliminal, but people spend a lot of money on their TVs, and as we know, Americans spend a lot of time in front of their TVs. And so because of it, I think they're willing to spend a little extra money to have that better experience.
One television that you mentioned coming out is the TVs with voice command integration that I would imagine have an automatic market, people who have physical disabilities.
Yes, I mean, that's one of the markets, but I think it goes beyond that. You know, with the introduction both of things like Siri, on the Apple phones, and the similar voice controls you see on Android, people are getting used to the idea of just talking to their phone. I have a 14-year-old son, and I cannot keep him away from Siri as he just sits around and asks ridiculous questions and tries to figure out how to make Siri, give stupid answers. So I think we're training people. Hey, it's a great way to have a conversation, right? So people are being trained. So, yes, there's the disability question. But when you're thinking about Dragon TV, which was one of the things that we saw introduced, or this RCA Mobile TV, which was also a talking TV.
Is the Dragon TV like Dragon Dictation?
Yeah. So the same idea. It's a smart TV. And you can use it. Right now it's relatively simple. You know, you talk to it, tell it to change the channel and do various other things. Here's the thing. As I was looking at this, I was thinking, I'm always losing the remote or trying to use the wrong remote where is that? So one thing, usually you don't lose your voice, although occasionally, I guess if you did too many of these shows, one might. But that's a real handy thing. And you say, please let's do this. I want to do email. I want to do Skype, whatever it is. It has apps for that. So you can use Dragon TV to do this. And what we've seen over the years, I can remember when I saw the first of these sort of applications, not just on TVs, but on computers, they were pretty funky, right? You would say things, and who knows what you'd get back. At this point, recognition on standard, if you have a pretty standard sort of voice, if you have accents and the like, it can be a problem. But for a lot of the voice recognition, it's really very good. It's quite clear. It picks up what you're saying and it acts on it. And I do think that people talking to their TV, which, big football season going on.
They talk to it all the time, right?
I hear people talking to their TV all the time. They're usually yelling at their TV, right? This will be. I think this is a new area for exploration. Again, I think we'll see a lot of these coming up.
And taking it to another level, Samsung's new high-end TVs, they include support for voice commands, but also gesture control and facial recognition.
Yeah. So here's where we're going in gesture control, especially. Think about going back to say the Wii, and now they're moving to Kinect, which got rid of the controller and just used your own body for making motions. People are, again, getting very comfortable with this natural way of interacting. It's intuitive, right, that you would move your hand and something would happen. So we're definitely going to see more of that, and those were on display. I mean, this is why it was so exciting seeing all these TVs, because it wasn't just one thing. Last year it was 3D TVs, and here's the glasses, or here's, different kind of glasses, and I kept on seeing, the same demos everywhere. This year everybody had a new wrinkle, and I imagine all of these things, whether it's talking or gesturing, Google TV, wireless TV, and so on, amazing resolution, these are all rolling up, and we're we're getting towards a sort of renaissance in the world of TVs.
And what about streaming games? What's the deal there?
So there are platforms and that offer games that you can stream, and that's not exactly new. I mean, you've certainly seen this from the various consoles, right? But as you start to see more of these being integrated into the TVs themselves, gaming is huge. It is just it's a phenomenon, and for anyone who thinks that games are just for kids or young men up through age of 28 hasn't looked at any of the demographics. It gets all over the board. This is pretty much what everybody is doing. Not me, of course, but, yes, me as well. People are just playing games all the time. So this is one of the main things that people want on their TVs. And so many of the games companies are bringing their information and their games themselves directly on, and it will be streamed, so that much like you can stream movies, you can stream games, and that also means it's very good for playing with other people, which is where the real payoff in this comes, because then you have a different kind of interactivity, where you're leaning forward and interacting with others, in some cases trying to blow them up, but, whatever.
Oh, why quibble over that?
Yeah, exactly. Whatever happens between friends, and, of course, you can, get your lives back and the like. So,
what's the Roku streaming stick?
Roku is just a streaming media player.
Okay.
Right? So, and there are a number of competitors. Roku is a real good one, and it just allows you to stream your movies anywhere, throughout your house. So, works in conjunction with other things. It's a box. Well, the Roku box is a box. And so you use it to stream stuff from TV A to TV B to, maybe to your computer, to wherever you want to see it. Part of the idea of having the freedom of watching TV where you want it is a big deal.
But do you have to have a special television to use it, or is that something that most televisions...
If you buy the Roku box, and I'm sorry that I'm not familiar with the Roku stick, and I'm sure I should be.
Okay.
But I know if you buy the Roku box, you plug it into your TV, and you can stream stuff all over the place. Which is, it's something that appends to a TV. It's not the TV itself, but it obviously makes your TV more robust, smarter, better, and many, many ways, and it's something a lot of people are looking at.
Well, Steve Fox, another segment has come to an end. We appreciate your time today.
Okay, thanks so much.
Steve Fox, he's editorial director and vice president of PCWorld.com, PC World Magazine. Coming up, Russell Holly, tech blogger at geek.com. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear conversations that you won't hear anywhere else. Do you understand love?
Well, I understand caring. See, most of my relationships are more intellect, and to me, love is caring.
Posing questions to fascinating people like Temple Grandin and giving them the time to answer on Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon. On today's Fresh Air, hear about growing up Muslim in the United States. It's the story of a Pakistani-American boy in Milwaukee coming to terms with his religion and identity. Join us for that discussion and more on Fresh Air beginning at noon on 89.7 NPR News. 51 degrees with some light rain in downtown Columbus. Expect occasional showers today and a high of 56 degrees. There's also a chance of rain tonight, maybe a little snow, a low of 22 degrees. Scattered flurries on Wednesday, partly sunny skies, a high of 31, and a chance of snow Thursday, a high of 33. And you have an opportunity to help shorten the 89.7 NPR News Winter Membership Drive. Become a sustaining member right now. For every 100 sustaining members we receive, we will eliminate one day from our drive. Right now, you can help take that one day off by becoming a sustaining member. Visit WOSU.org for more information, and thanks for your support. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas came to a close on Friday, setting records as the largest in the event's 44-year history, featuring 3,100 exhibitors and attendance of 153,000. Today on All Sides, we're talking about trends to watch as gadget makers showed off their latest tech products for the coming year, and we'll be talking about that with one of those 153,000, Geek.com tech blogger Russell Holley. Welcome back, Russell.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
We talked to you last week from the International Consumer Electronics Show. This was your second year going to the show. What was it like? Anything surprise you? Did it live up to your hopes and dreams?
This show, I think, was interesting because, you know, as is different with a lot of events, there's usually one real big thing that a lot of companies will try to focus on. You know, when you come back from a show like CES, there's usually one really significant thing that kind of, you know, you walk away with as kind of that wow device. And the interesting thing about this year was that it seemed like all of the announcements kind of existed at the same level of volume. You know, each one of those things that came out were significant. They were really cool, but there wasn't any one thing that I walked away with as you know, kind of that one thing to look forward to for this year.
Last week, we talked about the MakerBot 3D printer, which transforms digital blueprints into physical objects by building up layers of plastic, and you got to see one in action.
I did get to see one in action. I played with that for a little while and actually spoke to the founder of MakerBot, Bree Pettis, for a while at his booth. And it's really interesting to see how that platform has grown. You know, it's definitely something that it's hard to visualize for someone who's never really, looked into something like 3D printing, but it's a device that, you know, really could benefit so many people if, you know, the price can come down and if, you know, things like schools start to look at it, I think.
You know, it's one of the versions is $1,700, and granted, I'm not going to go out and buy it. It's pricey, but it's not in the stratosphere.
No, they're definitely a lot less expensive than they used to be. And it's companies like MakerBot that are continually looking at what they can do to lower prices and use less expensive materials to make that happen. And, you know, $1,700 is a huge shot down from, you know, just 2 years ago when these were, you know, $6,000, $10,000 devices.
So someone, I don't know if it was you, said it's analogous to buying a computer for your kid 15 years ago. It would have been a luxury, certainly, but it also gave them a big advantage.
Absolutely. When I interviewed Bree Pettis, one of the big things that I wanted to know was who he saw buying these more than anyone else. You know, who was the market that was, you know, getting these things and setting them up and using them. And I expected it really to be, you know, kind of the gadgety, techie, geeky guy like me. But really what he said that, what he sees more than anything else are parents, you know, getting them and you know, putting them in the house for their kids to come and learn how to use the software, learn how to take these, you know, these creative thoughts that they have in their minds and you know, build real things out of them.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page as well and post your question or comment there for Russell Holley, tech blogger at geek.com. We are talking about what he saw at the International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas last week. You have a question for him? Don't hesitate to make that call. 3,100 exhibitors in attendance of 153,000. Now, they were predicting that this was going to start ebbing, this show. It wasn't going to be as big.
Well, it's not. See, there was a lot of concern when we started hearing things like Microsoft wasn't going to be coming back next year.
Right.
You know, there wasn't, you know, a big thing. A lot of people, you know, are still having trouble absorbing concepts like why companies like Google and Microsoft and Apple don't have, you know, these big extravagant booths there. And the big reason is that, you know, these companies, you know, when they have something, you know, significant to demonstrate, they really kind of hold their own press event for it. You know, it would be a massive traffic issue, if nothing else, if Apple were to, you know, come to CES and unveil the next iPhone or something like that.
So it's kind of nice that they're not there.
Well, it allows, you know, more companies to demonstrate products that are, you know, exactly like I said, that, you know, this year there wasn't one big thing, but there were a lot of really interesting things.
We have an email from Chris, writes, with the current generation of game consoles still with plenty of life, I am still curious if anything was shown at CES only to the press, especially with the Wii U. Any thoughts on what's coming from Sony and Microsoft regarding game consoles?
Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo didn't have a whole lot new to say about gaming consoles. You know, the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360, you know, and the Wii for that matter, you know, they're all interesting in that they've actually been around longer without a new device on the horizon than any of their predecessors. You know, the original PlayStation and the PlayStation 2, there was only a couple of years between them. And so it's not so much that things have slowed down, it's just that, you know, the development of games, you know, was enhanced. So I would hope that, you know, sometime within the next year we'll start seeing, you know, more things pop up from Microsoft and Sony, but there wasn't anything at CES.
Now, what about streaming games?
Streaming games is an interesting thing that started, and it requires a fast data connection and a stable data connection, and that becomes an issue for a lot of people. You know, there are a lot of areas where, you know, like Verizon's Fios or, you know, Comcast's, you know, high-speed internet, you can do that just fine, but you can't do that on something like a DSL connection. You certainly can't do it on a dial-up connection. So it really only works in areas where there's a high-speed connection. And even then, it's going to give you the same level of gaming that you'd get from, you know, a PlayStation 2 or, you know, some of the early Xbox 360 games. You're not going to get the same graphic quality that you would get from, you know, some of the latest PC titles.
Cody in Columbus, you're on the air with Russell Holly. Welcome to the show, Cody.
Hi.
What's your question?
I had a question about the Ultrabook. Did you see any at CES that had a dedicated number pad? I worked in engineering. I worked with a lot of numbers, and I think that would be very handy.
Russell?
Off my head, I don't think I saw an Ultrabook with a dedicated number pad, but I can definitely go back through my notes and see if there was one that I found, and if there is, I can pass it on. But I don't remember seeing one specifically. I think Ultrabooks are definitely don't seem to be geared towards that particular kind of work, and they should be.
Yeah, I was thinking with the new Ivy Bridge coming out, maybe more possible.
Absolutely.
Okay. Cody, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
614-292-8513 if you have a question, as did Cody, for our tech blogger at geek.com, Russell Holly. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. So there were the topic, more secure online shopping software was demonstrated at CES. Russell?
Well, as far as software that was released at CES, it wasn't, you know, like a new critical application or anything that I saw. There were a lot of things that tie into existing pieces of hardware. There's
okay.
You know, like, for example, Sony's been doing some interesting things, and a lot of the other companies are starting to work in where, you know, all of their electronics are starting to have a kind of unison where they're going to start working together. You know, you have your cell phone made by, you know, LG or Samsung or something that can also control your LG television or your, you know, the refrigerators that are starting to come out that have some smart things in them that can, you know, give information that you'd be able to pick up from a phone or a computer. And so there's software in that aspect, but no, you know, dedicated piece of software that I found that was, you know, particularly striking.
What about the idea of instead of using a PIN or a passphrase, you enter into the computer, you would instead draw a picture on a card?
So one of the things that I saw there was a development on a piece of technology called near-field communication.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys that are kind of pushing that into the United States here, they're a company called NXP Semiconductors, and they had a big booth outside of CES where they were demonstrating a lot of the things that they were doing. Near-field communication is just kind of starting to be used here in the U.S. for, you know, basic forms of communication. I can take a near-field communication tag and put a link to a website or a YouTube video or something and stick it to maybe a movie poster. And when you walk up, you go to the theater and you see that movie, you actually can take your phone, if your phone has near field communication built in, and just touch your phone to the poster, and the movie for that poster, the preview will start to play on your phone.
That's the same sort of thing as like going up to a for sale sign at a house and being able to scan that. And
it's the same concept, but it happens, you know, without any real effort on your part. You know, so long as you have the phone in your hand, you touch your phone to the place where it says touch here, and the information is transferred to your phone from the electronic tag.
Now, I've seen stuff like this, it seems like, in futuristic movies, where you'll be walking through the mall and every ad will be reacting to you as you walk by.
Well, that's kind of a weird thing that we're heading towards, but it does a lot more than advertising. You know, I saw another demonstration there where a near-field, setup in a device was actually used to start a motorcycle. It was an electronic motorcycle, you know, battery-powered motorcycle that was there, and it had a pad, and the guy took the phone that he had, and he set it on the pad, and it was as though he had stuck the key in the engine and turned it. You know, as soon as it recognized, you know, his secure, you know, connection from the phone, then it unlocked the motorcycle and allowed him to drive it away.
I mean, ostensibly, couldn't you apply the same kind of technology to cars and all kinds of things like that?
It could be applied to so many different things. And it's something that, you know, in a lot of different ways exists in many other parts of the world. You know, in Europe and particularly in Japan, near-field communication is used for a lot of things like, transactions. You can walk up to a soda machine in Japan, tag your phone to the soda machine, and instead of digging for quarters that, you know, 75 cents or whatever was just removed from your bank account, and it deposits it releases the soda for you to have. And that, in a basic form, is starting to come up here in the U.S. with a service called Google Wallet.
Let's move on to cameras a bit. Anything interesting regarding in the camera biz, or is it just all about being on your phone now?
Well, one of the first shows that I had with you, we talked about how the smartphone was kind of trying to nudge out the idea of like a basic point-and-shoot camera.
Mm-hmm.
And Olympus actually had a whole line of cameras that got released at CES that were really impressive and incredibly cheap. I mean, the most expensive one that I saw that they had was $199.
Wow.
And that was a 14-megapixel camera with a 24x optical zoom, which is really impressive for that price.
It would have been impossible. It even seems a few years ago. I mean, that's really cheap. Is it good quality? I mean, is it built to stand the test of time and that sort of thing?
I had hands-on with each one of these cameras for a little while, and they all felt, you know, very solid. They felt like, you know, very nice cameras. The action shot on each one of these cameras was, you know, 7 frames a second, which is the same speed that you get from a real high-end camera, like a Sony NEX7. These are serious cameras, and they've improved a lot over the last couple of years. And it's interesting to see how, you know, there are still going to be people who would rather have that higher quality camera than their phone to put in their bag when they go on vacation, or to, you know, to slide in their purse when they go out for the day.
I can't remember if it was you or Steve Fox last week, but we were talking about a company that had a waterproofing.
LiquiPel.
Yeah, and it was someone wrote about it over the weekend saying it was the story for them. It was the story of the show.
I stopped by the LiquiPel booth for a little while, and I have to admit, while I wasn't the one who talked about it previously, the LiquiPel guys have my interest, but I'm still really unsure about the idea of this, you know, this almost magical, you know, solution that I put on my phone that makes it so, you know, water will just roll off of it. The guys are going to talk to me over the next couple of weeks, and we're going to see if, you know, if we can put a real test to it. The problem that you run into with services like that is that when you have, you know, pure water, distilled water, a lot of times, you know, pure water can wash over electronics and not cause as many problems.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have, you know, let's say rainwater or, you know, water that comes out of the faucet, that often has, you know, sediment and things like that in it. And those can cause problems. And the gentlemen at the LiquiPel booth weren't really able to answer, you know, how it handled the two different kinds. So I'm curious, but I'm definitely cautious. The idea of you know, being able to drop your cell phone in water and not think it's a big deal is still kind of a scary concept.
Yeah, because the idea is to be able to go whitewater rafting and do it.
Yeah.
And not have to worry about it. Not you know, leaning over the sink doing the dishes with your camera. So, 614-292, we still have a few minutes left with Russell Holley, tech blogger at geek.com. Any questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. There's something called a Skylanders game, and that's in conjunction, did you talk about that with the near field communication?
Yeah, Skylanders is a game made by Activision, and it works on almost everything. It works on Xbox and PlayStation and the Nintendo DS, and it uses a form of near-field communication. It's really a unique game in that there are characters that you buy, like physical toys that you buy, and when you want to play that character in the game comes with a pedestal, and you put the character on the pedestal, and then the character appears on your screen in the game.
Well, and that seems sort of extraneous.
It definitely seemed kind of unnecessary at first, and then when you play the game, you go through with that character, and you know you beat up the bad guys, and you collect money, and you buy new things. You know you improve your character by giving them new weapons and a new helmet or something like that. And when you take the character off of the pedestal, all of the things that you've done to that character, the money they've collected and the weapons and things that they've collected, are actually saved to that the plastic toy, to the figure. And so you can play with a character, and then you can remove the character and hand it to somebody else. And all of that information is saved, not like a saved game, but the character itself, is improved.
Okay. Now, before I forget, Apple is making some kind of announcement of some sort January 19th. What do you think that's going to be? Does anybody know?
I honestly have no idea. They've done a pretty good job of keeping this one secret.
Huffington Post predicts it will be about e-books. What more could we do with e-books at this point?
Well, I mean, basically, the only thing Apple would be able to do at this point would be to announce, something similar to what Amazon has done, with their Kindle Singles. It's kind of a micro-publishing service where if you have a story that's less than 15,000 words, then you can publish on Amazon for very, very cheap, and you can charge for like $1 to $4.99 for the book that you would publish. If Apple were to announce some kind of publishing suite that would make it easy for anyone to write and publish a book explicitly through Apple, I think that would be an interesting thing.
So they weren't there, but are you going to go back to the International Consumer Electronics Show next year? Is this going to be a regular stop?
It's definitely something that's worth doing. One of the cool things that happens that's not just, walking the show floor and seeing all these really great things is that there's so many companies there that this is one of the few opportunities that you can sit down and meet with these companies en masse and really, talk to a round table of companies that would never normally be together.
Russell Holley, thanks again for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Russell Holley is a tech blogger at geek.com. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.